Hello, and we continue now with chapter 22, Rebirth and Other Worlds, Karma, the Soul, and Immortality. Sri Aurobindo argues that there must be a zone, a home, a destination in which the soul can temporarily reside between birth and birth. Something that is consistent with our view of a many-layered world behind the physical. That there are superphysical planes that lead up to the origin of being. That these superphysical planes not only have interplay with each other, but also have decided influence upon events on earth, and that the soul, here to grow and reestablish, in a sense, the secrets of Satchit-Ananda in this material field, is in consort, is in internal communication with all of these realms of being above the physical. And so, since that is a verifiable fact to our experience, why would it not then be feasible that the soul, in exiting the body, would have some commerce with those superphysical planes? Sri Aurobindo is about to drive his point in that inquiry more deeply, beyond just the question of whether the mental being should go to a mental plane. He has a larger view to share. So he continues, it may be also that he may linger for a time in one of those annexes of the other worlds created by his habitual beliefs or by the type of his aspirations in the mortal body. Here he's talking about the soul which has discarded its physical sheath and is moving on. But are these necessarily the concrete worlds of the superphysical, the subtle physical, the vital, the mental? Or might they not be a creation of the mental energy of the soul leaving, that he might dwell in annexes to the physical world of his own creation through his imaginative power? So let's go a few sentences more with this. We know that he creates images of these superior planes, which are often mental translations of certain elements in them, and erects his images into a system, a form of actual worlds. He creates images of them because he visits them in his subliminal being, of which he can become conscious. He has ranged through these worlds, had experiences of them, and now has a repository of images which he can use in his active mind. He builds up also desire worlds of many kinds to which he attaches a strong sense of inner reality. So not simply mental images, but strong vital impulses continue to draw his attention. Perhaps he will use these images and these forces to construct a world of his own habitation. It is possible that these constructions may be so strong as to create for him an artificial post-mortal environment in which he may linger. For the image-making power of the human mind, its imagination, which is in his physical life only an indispensable aid to his acquisition of knowledge and his life creation, may, in a higher scale, become a creative force which would enable the mental being to live for a while amid its own images until they were dissolved by the soul's pressure. Sri Aurobindo is writing this in the early middle part of the 20th century. A couple of centuries earlier, Swedenborg, the Swedish scientist and philosopher, and later a mystic, had written compellingly about the nature of these worlds beyond this physical world, and recorded minutely his experiences in those worlds, and spoke about the power of the human imagination to create a world for itself after death. Now, Swedenborg had enormous influence. We tend to forget him now, but he was even impressive to Immanuel Kant as a scientist and philosopher, at least, even if he couldn't follow his imaginative ranges into worlds which Kant had never experienced. But Swedenborg's philosophy made a huge imprint on all metaphysical thinking in the 19th century into the 20th century. So sometimes as we go through this, you're seeing Sri Aurobindo actually engaging in dialogue with some of these ideas that existed from Swedenborg's time. I should say one more thing. May in a higher scale become a creative force which would enable the mental being to live for a while amid its own images until they were dissolved by the soul's pressure. This is an important clause. Sri Aurobindo gives some credibility to the thought that you can create a subjective world and into that world depart, and you're going hence. You can live there for a while. This will be your own mental creation. This will be your own vital world, your pleasure dome, if you will. But after some time, because we are not simply vital or mental beings, we are really souls who use mind and vital as experimental equipment through which we enjoin our lives in the world, we do feel, ultimately, a pressure from the soul within to put these playthings down and move on. That is what he means by the soul's pressure. The soul will not be content to linger for long in these worlds of fantasy or individualistic building. All these buildings, he writes, are of the nature of larger life constructions. In them, his mind translates some of the real conditions of the greater mental and vital worlds into terms of his physical experience, magnified, prolonged, extended to a condition beyond physicality. He carries, by this translation, the vital joy and vital suffering of the physical being into supraphysical conditions in which they have a greater scope, fullness, and endurance. These constructive environments must therefore be considered, so far as they have any supraphysical habitat, as annexes of the vital or of the lower mental planes of existence. So, they are simply attached to these greater buildings, simply abutting them. They are not worlds of their own. They depend upon them for their existence. He continues, but there are also the true vital worlds, original constructions, organized developments, native habitats of the universal life principle, the cosmic vital anima, acting in its own field and in its own nature. On his internatal journey, internatal simply means between births, on his internatal journey, he may be held there for a period by force of the predominantly vital character of the influences which have shaped his earthly existence. For these influences are native to the vital world, and their hold on him would detain him for a while in their proper province. So, if you're animated here in this life by strong vital currents, and you're strongly identified and attached to them, then as you leave this plane and get to the vital world, they'll have a certain claim upon you. Since you've paid attention to their energy, since you've proven to be receptive, your antennae are up, and their vibrations are received, well, they are those vibrations in full force. And so you'll sort of live in their orbit, at least for a period of time. He may be kept in the grasp of that which held him in its grasp, even in the physical being. Any residence of the soul in annexes or in its own constructions could be only a transitional stage of the consciousness in its passage from the physical to the supraphysical state. It must pass from these structures into the true worlds of supraphysical nature. It may enter at once into the worlds of other life, or it may remain first as a transitional stage in some region of subtle physical experience whose surroundings may seem to it a prolongation of the circumstances of physical life, but in freer conditions proper to a subtler medium and in some kind of happy perfection of mind or life or a finer bodily existence. So, passing beyond the physical into the subtle physical, one may dwell there, and in the subtle physical, instead of the dull hues that we see here on earth in our blinkered vision, things are bright and fresh and vivid, even as they house the animating life force and the vision of the mind. Beyond these subtle physical planes of experience and the life worlds, there are also mental or spiritual mental planes to which the soul seems to have an internatal access and into which it may pursue its internatal journey. But it is not likely to live consciously there if there has not been a sufficient mental or soul development in this life. Yes, there are the greater planes, the larger mental realms, the soul plane itself, but one cannot get there. I said soul plane, I mean spiritual planes. You cannot rise internatally to those realms until one has been sufficiently developed to sustain oneself there. Otherwise, brief visitation only. For these levels, he writes, must normally be the highest the evolving being can internatally inhabit, since one who has not gone beyond the mental rung in the ladder of being would not be able to ascend to any supramental or overmental state. Or if he had so developed as to overleap the mental level and could attain so far, it might not be possible for him to return so long as the physical evolution has not developed here an organization of an overmental or supramental life in matter. So here you're seeing the necessity of the soul having commandeered and managed and mastered the enginery of material life. Only then can you establish the connection among them all in a way that is living and meaningful. But even so, he says, the mental worlds are not likely to be the last normal stage of the after-death passage, for man is not entirely mental. It is the soul, the psychic being, and not the mind, that is the traveler between death and birth. And the mental being is only a predominant element in the figure of its self-expression. There must then be a final resort to a plane of pure psychic existence in which the soul would await rebirth. There, it could assimilate the energies of its past experience and life and prepare its future. So he has sketched very briefly these steps through which the soul ascends through the subtle physical, through the vital, through the mental, finally getting to the pure psychic plane where it undertakes its rest, a final resort, as he says. Ordinarily, the normally developed human being who has risen to a sufficient power of mentality might be expected to pass successively through all these planes, subtle physical, vital and mental, on his way to his psychic habitation. At each stage, he would exhaust and get rid of the fractions of formed personality structure, temporary and superficial, that belonged to the past life. He would cast off his mind sheath and life sheath, as he had already cast off his body sheath. But the essence of the personality and its mental, vital, and physical experiences would remain in latent memory or as a dynamic potency for the future. So, essentially, retaining all the potency from the experiences in this sheath just set down. One travels through the planes and amasses them. They are treasure not to be discarded, but we do not permit ourselves simply to be defined by that which we just left. All the fractional parts of our being are set aside. The essence is kept. So the personality characteristics, the particular unique formations, need not be carried on. But what is essentially there behind that is carried forward. But if the development of mind were insufficient, it is possible that it would not be able to go consciously beyond the vital level, and the being would either fall back from there, returning from its vital heavens or purgatories to earth, or, more consistently, would pass at once into a kind of psychic assimilative sleep coextensive with the internatal period. To be awake in the highest planes, a certain development would be indispensable. Note that he says vital heavens or purgatories, because certainly, as we have been pursuant with vital energies of a certain kind here upon earth, they may continue to attract us or strike fear in us when we get to these other planes and have no longer the body to protect us from them. We experience them in their full force. So they may seem like heaven or like purgatory to us, and in fact are. But if the soul has not got sufficient power to get to that mind plane, then after fulfilling what time has to be spent in that vital area, then it would go into this assimilative sleep, a sort of psychic slumber, which lasts pretty much the whole of the internatal period. And then it comes to wakefulness and descends into the earth field for its next incarnation. For us to be awake in the highest planes, higher mental planes and above, we have to achieve something in terms of our evolutionary power. We have to have gone through what is available on this earth and manifested and learned to master all the elements possible to us. Then we have the right to work in those fields from which that evolution was influenced and in which it was formed here. Remember, influence coming from above, from the mind worlds, finding here a receptive instrument in us, and then us accepting that influence and working out the terms of what it means to be a mental being. If we do that, prove our commerce with it in terms of concrete action here, then we have access to those realms after we leave this body behind. Until we've shown that kind of mastery, we're conducted to a place where we can get good rest and prepare for the next incarnation. But it's not that we can roam all these worlds free. Remember, we referred to that passage from the Taittiriya Upanishad, where the soul free moves through all these worlds victoriously and in joy, in full collaboration with all the forces of the cosmos, inalienably divine. Cannot be drawn out of bliss, because now that soul knows it is bliss. He continues, all this, however, is a matter of dynamic probability, and that, though amounting in practice to a necessity, though justified by certain facts of subliminal experience, is still, for the reasoning mind, not in itself quite conclusive. We have to ask whether there is any more essential necessity for these internatal intervals, or at least any of so great a dynamic power as to lead to an irresistible conclusion. We shall find one such necessity in the decisive part played by the higher planes in the earth evolution and the relation that it has created between them and the evolving soul consciousness. Our development takes place very largely by their superior but hidden action upon the earth plane. All is contained in the inconscient or the subconscient, but in potentiality. It is the action from above that helps to compel an emergence. A continuance of that action is necessary to shape and determine the progression of the mental and vital forms which our evolution takes in material nature. For these progressive movements cannot find their full momentum or sufficiently develop their implications against the resistance of an inconscient or inert and ignorant material nature, except by a constant, though occult, resort to higher supraphysical forces of their own character. This resort, and let's remember what resort means. It means to revert, to go, to rebound, to retire back into. This resort, the action of this veiled alliance, takes place principally in our subliminal being and not on the surface. So there is this interplay, this descent of influence from above, our reception of it, then our action of it, all conducted behind the screen, but pressing itself into the objective surface being outside. It is from there that the active power of our consciousness emerges, and all that it realizes, it sends back constantly into the subliminal being to be stored up, developed, and reemerge in stronger forms hereafter. This interaction of our larger hidden being and our surface personality is the main secret of the rapid development that operates in man once he has passed beyond the lower stages of mind immersed in matter. So he's described here this interaction between the subliminal and the surface being, and said this is where the forceful progress comes in evolution, because there is this commerce, because we have become sensitive enough, refined enough, capacious enough to receive these influences, we can move forward faster. It isn't another kind of trick of evolution that allows us to move. It is this commerce. This resort must continue in the internatal stage. He's speaking about this commerce there to here. For a new birth, a new life, is not a taking up of the development exactly where it stopped in the last. It does not merely repeat and continue our past surface personality and formation of nature. There is an assimilation, a discarding and strengthening and rearrangement of the old characters and motives, a new ordering of the developments of the past, and a selection for the purposes of the future, without which the new start cannot be fruitful or carry forward the evolution. For each birth is a new start. It develops indeed from the past, but is not its mechanical continuation. Rebirth is not a constant reiteration, but a progression. It is the machinery of an evolutionary process. So there is nothing purposeless in the movement of our soul through incarnation after incarnation. It is part of an evolutionary process. It is not a reiteration, which means to say it is not the same thing done over and over and over again. It is a progression. We exhibit increasing power and mastery over the instruments that we occupy. And all of it is machinery through which we achieve an evolved perfection, or we shall. Part of this rearrangement, the discarding especially of past strong vibrations of the personality, can only be affected by an exhaustion of the push of previous mental, vital, physical motives after death. And this internatal liberation or lightening of impedimenta must be put through on the planes proper to the motives that are to be discarded or otherwise manipulated, those planes which are themselves of that nature. For it is only there that the soul can still continue the activities which have to be exhausted and rejected from the consciousness so that it can pass on to a new formation. Impedimenta, baggage, encumbrances. It is probable also that the integrating positive preparation would be carried out, and the character of the new life would be decided by the soul itself in a resort to its native habitat, a plane of psychic repose, where it would draw all back into itself and await its new stage in the evolution. This would mean a passage of the soul progressively through subtle physical, vital, and mental worlds to the psychic dwelling place from which it would return to its terrestrial pilgrimage. The terrestrial gathering up and development of the materials thus prepared, there working out in the earth life, would be the consequence of this internatal resort, and the new birth would be a field of the resultant activity, a new stadium or spiral curve in the individual evolution of the embodied spirit. So we gather these things together. We envision what it is that we want to do, and then we come into earth and largely do it, or make a meaningful attempt at it. These things aren't the accidents of occasions, sequences colliding here, but are intentionally working out a plan put together above in this resort, as it were. And you can read that term as broadly as you like. So things are gathered and arranged in the internatal state for the coming birth. He continues, "For when we say that the soul on earth evolves successively, the physical, the vital, the mental, the spiritual being, we do not mean that it creates them and that they had no previous existence. On the contrary, what it does is to manifest these principles of its spiritual entity under the conditions imposed by a world of physical nature. This manifestation takes the form of a structure of frontal personality, which is a translation of the inner self into the terms and possibilities of the physical existence. This happens microcosmically, and I might say this happens macrocosmically also. It's true of us. It's true of the world soul in which we have a role. In fact, we must accept the ancient idea that man has within him not only the physical soul or purusha with its appropriate nature, but a vital, a mental, a psychic, a supramental, a supreme spiritual being." This from the Taittiriya Upanishad. I think he referred to it at the start of the chapter, 3.10.5. "And either the whole or the greater presence or force of them is concealed in his subliminal or latent and unformulated in his superconscient parts. He has to bring forward their powers in his active consciousness and to awake to them in its knowledge. But each of these powers of his being is in relation with its own proper plane of existence, and all have their roots there." So we're trying to master all of these powers here in life. Matter, the body connected to the subtle body, the life in us connected to the plane of life, prana, the mind in us connected to the world of mind, manas. All of these things are working in us from behind as we are trying to work with them concretely here. They have their play here, but their roots there, just as the cosmic tree has its roots above and extends its branches below. Let's not confuse the causation. The causation is from above, from the higher, expressing itself in the lower. If we misread evolution and think that things are being worked out here, according to the laws of physical existence, we have misunderstood. We have fundamentally misunderstood he continues, it is through them, these higher planes, that there takes place the subliminal resort of the being to the shaping influences from above, a resort which may become more and more conscious as we develop. So we enter into stronger, more open communion with them. They can send into us sailing vessels filled with the riches of those worlds if we have harbors within us to receive them. It is logical then that according to the development of their powers in our conscious evolution should be the internatal resort which this nature of our birth here and its evolutionary object and process necessitate. The circumstances and the stages of that resort must be complex and not of the crudely and trenchantly simple character which the popular religions imagine. But in itself, it can be accepted as an inevitable consequence of the very origin and nature of the soul life in the body. All is a closely woven web, an evolution and an interaction whose links have been forged by a conscious force following out the truth of its own motives according to a dynamic logic of these finite workings of the infinite. This is a consistent theme reaching all the way back to the opening chapters of the Life Divine. And now he'll begin to develop a common view, the ordinary view, of the soul's birth and its passage hence. We'll get through only a part of it tonight. One more paragraph, and then we'll pause. In this view of rebirth and the soul's temporary passage into other planes of existence is correct. Both rebirth and the afterlife assume a different significance from the color put on them by the long current belief about reincarnation and the after-death sojourn in worlds beyond us. Reincarnation is commonly supposed to have two aspects, metaphysical and moral, an aspect of spiritual necessity, an aspect of cosmic justice and ethical discipline. The soul, in this view or for this purpose, supposed to have a real individual existence. He places it that way because, of course, the Buddhist or the Advaitist neither believes in the real existence of an individual soul. Is on earth as a result of desire and ignorance. The soul is on earth as a result of desire and ignorance. The common view. It has to remain on earth or return to it always, so long as it has not wearied of desire and awakened to the fact of its ignorance and to the true knowledge. This desire compels it to return always to a new body. It must follow always the revolving wheel of birth till it is enlightened and liberated. It does not, however, remain always on earth, but alternates between earth and other worlds, celestial and infernal, where it exhausts its accumulated store of merit or demerit due to the enactment of sin or virtue, and then returns to the earth and to some kind of terrestrial body, sometimes human, sometimes animal, sometimes even vegetable. Popular view of transmigration. The nature of this new incarnation and its fortunes are determined automatically by the soul's past actions, karma. If the sum of past action was good, the birth is in the higher form, the life happy or successful or unaccountably fortunate. If bad, A lower form of nature may house us, or the life, if human, will be unhappy, unsuccessful, full of suffering and misfortune. If our past actions and character were mixed, then nature, like a good accountant, gives us, according to the pitch and values of our former conduct, a well-assorted payment of mixed happiness and suffering, success and failure, the rarest good luck and the severest ill fortune. At the same time, a strong personal will or desire in the past life may also determine our new avatar, our descent. A mathematical aspect is often given to these payments of nature, for we are supposed to incur a precise penalty for our misdeeds, undergo or return the replica or equivalent of what we have inflicted or enacted. The inexorable rule of a tooth for a tooth is a frequent principle of the karmic law, for this law is an arithmetician with his abacus, as well as a judge with his code of penalties for long past crimes and misdemeanors. It is also to be noted that in this system there is a double punishment and a double reward for sin and virtue. For the sinner is first tortured in hell, and afterwards afflicted for the same sins in another life here. And the righteous or the Puritan is rewarded with celestial joys, and afterwards again pampered for the same virtues and good deeds in a new terrestrial existence. Well, Sri Aurobindo is having a bit of fun with this here, a bit of fun with popular religion. We'll put a bookmark there, I think, and return to it next time when we meet a Sunday hence. Tonight, I think you would agree it would make sense if we went to Book 2, the Book of the Traveler of the Worlds, and into Canto 2, the Kingdom of Subtle Matter. All that here seems has lovelier semblance there. Whatever our hearts conceive, our heads create, some high original beauty forfeiting, thence exiled here consents to an earthly image. Thence exiled here consents to an earthly tinge. Whatever is here of visible charm and grace finds there its faultless and immortal lines. All that is beautiful here is there divine. Figures are there, undreamed by mortal mind, bodies that have no earthly counterpart, traverse the inner eye's illumined trance, and ravish the heart with their celestial tread, persuading heaven to inhabit that wonder sphere. The future's marvels wander in its gulfs. Things old and new are fashioned in those depths. A carnival of beauty crowds the heights in that magic kingdom of ideal sight. In its antechambers of splendid privacy, matter and soul in conscious union meet, like lovers in a lonely secret place, in the clasp of a passion not yet unfortunate. They join their strength and sweetness and delight, and mingling make the high and low worlds one. Intruder from the formless infinite, daring to break into the inconscient's reign, the spirit's leap towards body touches ground. As yet unwrapped in earthly lineaments, already it wears out lasting death and birth, convincing the abyss by heavenly form a covering of its immortality, alive to the luster of the wearer's rank, fit to endure the rub of change and time. A tissue mixed of the soul's radiant light and matter's substance of sign-burdened force. Imagine vainly in our mind's thin air an abstract phantasm mold of mental make. It feels what earthly bodies cannot feel and is more real than this grosser frame. After the falling of mortality's cloak, lightened is its weight to heighten its ascent, refined to the touch of finer environments. It drops old patterned palls of denser stuff, cancels the grip of Earth's descending pole, and bears the soul from world to higher world, till in the naked ether of the peaks, the spirit's simplicity alone is left, the eternal being's first transparent robe. Namaste, Jai Ma.